Did you know that Wisconsin is fourth in the nation for overall maple syrup production and that last year produced more than 265,000 gallons of maple syrup? I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Jeremy Solon. He is a fourth-generation syrup producer and the Maple Syrup Project Manager for UW Extension. His business is Tapped Maple Syrup in Stevens Point, and his farm is over in Antigo. We'll talk with him about what it's like to tap a tree and about a new grant that will help tell Wisconsin communities about sugaring. Do you tap trees for maple syrup? Are you interested in starting a sugaring business? Well, we'd like to hear from you. So join the conversation. It's 800-642-1234 or send us an email at wpr.org. Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jill. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So tell us about the maple sugar industry in Wisconsin, way bigger than I really knew.
Yeah, as you said, we're fourth in the country, and actually this, we just got some more recent statistics. We produced about 300,000 gallons of maple syrup 2021, and that continues to show an increase through time. And there are lots of people involved in it, everywhere from hobby folks who tap a single tree in their backyard to very large producers. Last year, somewhere around 850,000 trees were tapped in the state. And there's, just incredible potential to continue to grow that as well.
Now, are there particular trees that you want to tap that are better than others?
Yeah, so obviously to make maple syrup, you need a maple tree. That's the starting point, I guess. But we have a whole bunch of maple trees in the state. So we have sugar maple, we have red maple, silver maple, box elder is actually a maple tree as well. So all of those can be tapped to make syrup. The preferred species generally is the sugar maple, just because it has a little bit higher sugar content. But really all those trees can be used to make syrup. So whatever tree happens to be on land that you have access to will work.
And one of the things that I've been wondering with the change in our climate, how is that affecting the sugaring in our state? Is it a good thing or is it not such a good thing?
Yeah, generally we're still in a bit of a wait and see situation. We've seen changes already in that the season has gotten earlier. You know, when growing up, making maple syrup with my dad and my uncle, my dad always talked about tapping in early April, and now our typical tapping time is early March, so the season has shifted considerably. But so far, that hasn't had an impact on how much maple syrup is produced. You know, there's a lot of variability every year based on the weather, and overall, we haven't seen a big impact there. Some of the models, though, looking at climate projections, show some, worrying potential for shifts of maple range, so moving north over the course of the century. And then one of the things that's particularly troubling is that something we don't often think about, but if summers are warmer, the trees actually grow faster, and they actually use up more of the sugar that they make through photosynthesis. So photosynthesis increases a little bit with warmer temperature, but the tree growth increases more than that. So there have been some studies done, and the models show that there potentially will be lower sugar content in the trees as the climate warms. So that definitely could have an impact as we move forward.
Interesting to keep an eye on that for sure.
Yeah.
Now, you're overseeing this grant through the UW Extension that's, hoping to grow this industry here in the state. What is it actually going to be used for?
Yeah, so we have a three-year grant. It's called an ACER grant, which comes from USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture. And those grants are available nationally to support the maple syrup industry in a variety of ways. And this is the first one that Wisconsin has received, and the focus is really about helping grow the industry, like you said, in particular paying attention and supporting audiences that haven't typically been involved in education programs or involved in kind of technical support. So in particular, farmers who maybe have a woodlot as part of their farm but haven't really Identified that as a potential income source. Wisconsin's Native American tribes are another audience of ours to see how we can continue to support their efforts, learn more about what they need. Of course, the tribes in Wisconsin have been making maple syrup for tens of thousands of years, right? They're the original maple sugars in the area. And so they, you know, obviously have a lot of tradition and heritage around this, but are looking to the future, potentially, you know, additional revenue streams and things like that. So working to support their efforts. And then just generally beginning to build a program. Wisconsin, a while back, decades ago, did have a maple syrup specialist, but it's been a long time since we've had a program. And so this grant is kind of our first step to begin to do that work again. And one of the first things we'll do is actually to just spend a lot of time talking with maple syrup producers to find out what they need and how we might be able to respond. And it really builds on Extension's expertise. We have strong programs in forestry to support forest woodland owners, obviously in agriculture, community development, economic development. So we'll really try and leverage all of those resources to help support the industry in the state.
What do you anticipate some of those needs will be for some of these growers? Or I don't, they're not growers really, are they? What are they? Manufacturers?
Yeah, we generally call them producers.
Producers, okay, good name.
But yeah,
name.
All of them work. All those names work. Yeah, you know, some of the most common things are access to equipment. So you can really make maple syrup with very basic equipment, right? As long as you have a drill to drill into a tree and you have a spout of some type to get sap out of the tree and some way to collect it, and then a heat source to cook, you can make syrup. But those are pretty inefficient ways to do things. So the understanding of kind of using more advanced equipment and then the kind of, you know, access to be able to do that is one of the very common barriers. And then just general kind of understanding of the cooking process, ways to make the process more efficient are common barriers. And then I think a big one right now too is just markets. And, you know, if you make syrup for, you know, the people in your household and you give some syrup away, taking that next step into where do I sell syrup is a big kind of consideration. So helping to identify what those markets might be and, you know, helping to kind of support the growth of maple syrup use generally will be an important part too as we move forward. So those market type needs will be an important aspect of that as well.
Now tell us about your business, because you're fourth generation in this business. Why did you decide to continue this, and what's your business like? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I grew up making maple syrup, as did my dad and uncle, and now our kids are involved as well. So they're fifth generation, and we have land in Lang Lake County, just north of Antigo. And one of the things that kind of drove my interest in maple syrup was just the opportunity to stay connected to that land, to have a family business. You know, for our kids to get to work with my parents and the community around us was a really important consideration. And I think that's true of a lot of maple syrup businesses. It kind of, the root of it is really being connected to the land and having that family experience and, you know, working with neighbors and all of that. So that was one key thing for me. And then another is, I like to kind of paraphrase Wendell Berry a little bit here, but Wendell Berry, who's an author, farmer out of Kentucky, likes to say that land that isn't utilized, you know, gets kind of bought up into the larger industrial type of practices. And so I knew that we needed to have some type of income stream from that land so that it could continue to stay in our family. And we do a variety of things, Christmas trees. My dad raises some cattle, but maple syrup is one of those key things that allows us to generate some revenue, and make sure that land can stay in our family. And that's a really important consideration, for me. And I think as I look at the potential of maple syrup in this state, I really think of it as a rural development strategy, that, you know, we have tons of land, tons of maple trees, millions of maple trees, less than 1% of them are currently being tapped. And it's an opportunity for people to generate income off their land and use that to build community and build local economies around maple syrup. So one of the things we do in our business is kind of, you know, I talk a lot about maple syrup beyond pancakes. Maple syrup is great on pancakes, but it's very basic. That's the basic use. So there are so many other products and uses for it. And so I think that's where a lot of the potential lies in the state, is thinking about other products and other markets that haven't really been tapped yet, pun intended, I guess, there, with maple syrup. So that's kind of how we've kind of built our business as well from that perspective.
So beyond pancakes, I like it. I can see all the marketing materials now.
Exactly
is right. So are most of the businesses that that do this small, like yours, where this isn't their main income, but it's an additional income?
Yeah, the vast majority. And really the vast majority are probably just hobbyists who are making syrup for their own use and don't sell any of it. And then there are a lot of, you know, small producers who, you know, sell it out of their house, or maybe have a roadside stand, or go to a farmer's market here and there. We in Wisconsin, we have some larger producers, but we're not like the eastern states that are dominated by large producers. And I also think that's one of the very unique things about the Midwest, and I'll lump Minnesota and Michigan in there too, is that we are dominated by smaller producers and who have some real potential to grow.
Wonderful. Well, we're talking with Jeremy Solon, the Maple Syrup Project Manager for UW Extension and owner of Tapped Maple Syrup in Stevens Point. What questions do you have about tapping trees? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. We'll be back right after this look at the news. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about sugaring and maple syrup production with fourth generation maple syrup producer Jeremy Solon. He is the Maple Syrup Project Manager for UW Extension, as well as the owner of Tapped Maple Syrup in Stevens Point. Have you ever tapped a maple tree? Do you like to buy maple syrup from local sources? What questions do you have about sugaring? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send us an email. The address is WPR.org. And let's go straight over to the phones, Jeremy. We got lots of callers online. First one up is Gordy in Mosinee. Hi, Gordy.
Hi, this is a great show, and I guess I missed part of it. I guess you've already addressed climate change to some extent. I think every person who likes maple syrup should become a climate activist. But maybe address the differences of seasonal changes that we're experiencing because of high or low moisture events, and how that affects production, and how early thaws, for instance, or unseasonable thaws in during the maple syrup season can affect production. And then small batch producers, like I'm a small batch producer, I think is a relatively untapped resource in terms of each producer makes a little bit different tasting maple syrup, and a lot of people like to try different varieties. And I'd encourage anybody to try different producers' offerings during the season.
Okay, a lot to answer there, Jeremy. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Gordy. So a little bit about the kind of climate impacts and the seasonal events that are happening. I can touch on some of those. There's a lot going on there, obviously, and we're likely to see more. So as I mentioned, the season generally is getting earlier. This past year, we had an exceptionally short season. So in our sugar bush, it was only 3 weeks long. So all of maple syrup activities happened in the month of March, which meant it was a really intense short season. The thing that is happening, as Gordy mentioned or has been happening a lot recently is we get pretty immediate kind of warm temperatures. So we come out of winter, we get into a situation where there's good sap flow conditions, which for sap to flow, we need freezing during the night and above thawing temperatures during the day. The kind of 25 to 40 degree swing is kind of ideal. And if the temperature warms up too fast, we basically don't have a season or have a very short season. And so that's definitely, you know, potentially going to have an impact if that happens, which we're likely to see. The other thing that causes problems there is when there's frost in the ground, smaller scale producers who use buckets or bags to collect sap are in the woods with vehicles of some sort, whether those are four-wheelers or trucks or tractors. And when you have frozen conditions, you don't really do any damage in the forest. But when the frost comes out of the ground so rapidly, there's still a syrup season going on, then you have potential for pretty dramatic damage in the forest from rutting and all kinds of things like that. The other thing that's going on too is, you know, we in Wisconsin are, you know, kind of used to this idea of a January thaw where we get a warm up in January a little bit, but it seems now like every month has that. we get a little bit of snow, it's a little bit cold, and then it warms up. And so this kind of fluctuation of temperatures definitely causes some concerns of, do the trees start growing too early and then get cold and, you know, have an impact on the trees? We haven't seen that yet, but it's definitely a concern. And then the other part about small scale producers, yeah, Gordy's absolutely right. Every sugar bush produces a different flavor of syrup that varies by year based on the conditions during the growing season the year before and during the tapping season based on the weather. And there's a lot of potential there. One, you know, from the user consumer standpoint, just to kind of check out different sugar bushes and find syrups that are to your liking, but also an opportunity to kind of market that and create situations where, you know, many producers come together potentially to form a cooperative or something like that that takes advantage of that specific sugar bush's production. You know, something in the food world we'd call terroir, the specific food of the flavor of that place. And so I think, you know, that's one of the things down the road we'll be looking at is what is the structure that supports those small producers in accessing those markets as well. And again, leveraging existing extension programs like the Community Food Systems Program and food entrepreneurship resources that we have will definitely be part of that effort.
Great. Thank you for that call, Gordy. Let's go to Stella in Sturgeon Bay next. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I just very quickly would like to mention that I've had some very delicious birch syrup from a friend tapping birch trees, but I was calling mainly about we stopped using refined white sugar a number of years ago, and we used maple sugar for times when we needed dry sugar and syrup isn't appropriate, and we've been buying it from a business that is in Vermont. And being native Wisconsinites, we would like to support Wisconsin businesses. If you know of or can direct us to any maple producers who produce maple sugar in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's great, Stella. Thank you. So just to touch on a couple of things there, birch syrup. Yeah, we do produce a little bit of birch syrup in Wisconsin, and syrup can actually be made from a few other trees too, made from walnut trees, hickory trees. Most hickory syrup is actually made from boiled bark, not the sap of the tree, but there are a variety of other trees that can be used. As far as maple sugar, it's not as common of a product in Wisconsin, but there are definitely producers who take the syrup all the way down to sugar. The best place to look for that is that there's a trade organization, the Wisconsin Maple Syrup Producers Association, and they do have some of their producers listed on their website. So you can go onto their website, which is wismaple.org. And that's probably the best place to kind of search out a potential producer there. And as long as I'm mentioning that, they have an event this weekend, the Wisconsin Winter Maple Institute. And those events like that they organize are great ways to interact with some of the producers and find some of those products as well. So I would check that out as a place to find maple sugar in Wisconsin. Yeah. Definitely switch from Vermont maple sugar.
Oh, you know, for sure.
We can say that. Yeah.
We can say that. It's Wisconsin Public Radio. And I know that we have it here because I've had some and it's so good. It really, yeah. really is. So thank you for that question, Stella. And let's go on to Lynn in Madison. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. It's a very interesting program today. I was wondering if any maple syrup producers had ever thought about or tried making wine out of the maple sap. It's got natural sugars. I would think that one could reduce the water amount till you get the right hydrometer rating for either a dry or medium or sweet wine.
You're shaking your head, Jeremy. That must yep. be a yes.
Yeah. I love how you think, Lynn. That's great. yeah, I think there's so much potential for, you know, so many products. So I don't know of any commercially available Wisconsin maple wines, but I know that they're out there and there may be maybe someone in Wisconsin, but there are a whole bunch of products like that. So there's work going on in distilling, so making maple-based spirits. There are several maple-based beers in the state. There's a product that's more in line with a mead that's called Acer Glen, which it follows the same kind of process to make mead out of honey, but using maple syrup. And then wine. And yeah, all of those are, I would say, in early stages of developing. Some states are a little bit farther ahead than we are, which is, you know, something that hopefully will overturn quickly. And we'll get out ahead of a bunch of those things. But yeah, that really gets into kind of this just amazing potential for, you know, additional products from maple syrup. And so in addition to all of those alcoholic based beverages, there are things like vinegars and salad dressings and barbecue sauces and, you know, kind of cocktail mixes that are not alcohol based, all kinds of things like that, that maple syrup is amazing in. So we'll look forward to seeing lots more of those
for sure.
develop.
Thank you, Lynn. And on that same note, let's talk to Arthur in the town of Dane. He has another question similar to that. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. Love the program and the topic. My question is about a product that kind of popped onto the market a few years ago called maple water, which I'm pretty sure was just maple sap that they bottled up and sold. And I absolutely loved it. And a couple of like health food stores would carry it. And then it just totally vanished. And I had always assumed that maple sap didn't have a very long shelf life. And that was why they had to produce it into syrup so quickly. But if you know anything about maple water and how I could get some, that would be awesome.
yeah, that's great. Thanks, Arthur. Yeah, so maple sap, what you were buying was maple sap, most likely just straight from the tree, filtered. And you're correct that maple sap has a very short shelf life. So the challenge with getting it in drinkable form is how do you kind of stabilize it and preserve it? And so there have been a number of things that have been tried, pasteurization and adding some preservatives in there. I don't know exactly that, you know, the brand that you were looking at. It is still available in places you might have to search out, but I think it's another one of those early stage products where I think what we're seeing is a bunch of startups trying to do something doesn't work out. And then it's going to take a little while for someone else to pick that up and for it to move on again. But maple water, for those who are not familiar, very similar to something like a coconut water, very similar properties, high nutritional value, just a slight sweet sugar content, but an amazing drink. And actually in North Korea, there's a species of maple that grows in Korea, and both North and South Korea, and the trees are tapped, but they don't make syrup out of it. They drink the entire two countries' production of sap straight up. So I was just reading a little bit about it. There are people who go on essentially like maple sap diets during the season, and that's all they drink for the few weeks that it's available is maple sap as a cleansing kind of process. And so I think we'll see more of that coming up, but you should be able to find it somewhere. You might have to buy online if you can't get it locally. But it's a product that I think has a lot of potential for sure.
Just need some celebrity endorsements, Jeremy, and then we're we're good to go on that one. It sounds delicious. It really does.
It's amazing. It is. I drink a lot of sap during the season just because it's so delicious, refreshing, and kind of rejuvenating.
And I would think the production would be a lot easier on producers. You don't have to do anything to it other than bottle it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The trick is that stabilizing it part. Sure. So, but yes, if possible, it definitely has some economic draw to it for sure.
Yeah. Now, Jerry from Hazel Green called, but he couldn't stay with us. And he was wondering how tree disease might impact maple syrup production, because he's considering tapping some trees for syrup, but he doesn't want to, you know, harm the trees. Is there some way that disease maybe travels between the two, something like that?
Yeah, so far we're lucky. We don't have anything that is of concern. The tapping process really doesn't harm the tree. It's when you tap the tree, it's dormant, and it has a natural kind of reaction to a wound, just like if a branch was broken off or it cracked through a windstorm or something like that. And so the tree actually begins to heal itself as soon as it comes out of dormancy. And it's definitely something you want to be concerned of. You want to make sure you have clean equipment like the drill and things like that. But right now there isn't anything that's been infecting trees. So we're really, really lucky there. And the kind of in that same vein, a mature maple tree has tens of thousands of gallons of sap in it, somewhere around, 1,000 to 2,000 pounds of sugar stored in it at any one time. And during the syrup season, when the sap is running, we're taking out a tiny, tiny percentage of that. So on a good year, maybe we get 10 to 20 gallons of sap out of it, which is equivalent of, maybe 3 to 5 pounds of sugar. So we're taking it, the tiniest fraction in a sense of that tree's food. So there isn't a real impact there on the tree. It's kind of like, us donating blood. It can rejuvenate that pretty readily. The main thing that is a concern is that you do need to make sure that the trees get to a decent size before tapping, because when you do tap, the healing process of the tree actually kind of sections off a chunk of the tree, and and it doesn't pass sap through that section of tree anymore. So it's kind of a dead spot in the tree a little bit. And if you tap a tree that's too small structurally, that can be a problem. So we generally talk about we want trees to get to 10 inches in diameter before we tap. And that way there's plenty of sap in it and we don't have to worry about the structural damage to the tree.
Now, when you tap it again the next year, you have to go to a different spot then.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yep. Okay. And you kind of generally work your way around the tree, and the tree grows around the old hole. So as the tree grows, it actually closes off that hole on the outside and then keeps adding wood. So you want to be able to kind of space the taps out in a way that by the time you get back to that original hole, it's already grown. The tree has grown over it by a couple of inches. So there's good live fresh wood there that you can tap into again. And so in that way, you can tap forever in a sense, as long as the tree lives, which maples will live 200 years plus when they're healthy. And but you can continue to do that. But yeah, each year you have to space that out to give to tap into the fresh wood, make sure you're not tapping into dead wood.
And now, we haven't really talked about the process at all. For those who are maybe interested in doing this and, they got a couple of trees in their backyard, number one, where can they go to get more information, and where can they get the equipment?
Yeah. So there, right now we're in the process. The Extension Maple program is in the process of building our website. So eventually you'll be able to come there.
Okay.
But right now I'd go to that wismaple.org site. There's a beginner's guide there. And then also Iron County Extension way up in northern Wisconsin has been doing some work. And so there's some good materials there as well on the Iron County Extension webpage, and they have a beginner's site there. So it talks about tree identification, working on a few additional videos of tapping a tree, collecting sap and boiling syrup. So those two places are where I'd send folks right now. As far as equipment, for the hobbyist, there is usually basic equipment at places like hardware stores. So your neighborhood community hardware store will have a few spouts and some bags or buckets for you to hang on those to collect sap. And then you need a drill, which you could also get there as well. So either a 7/16 or a 5/16 inch drill. So the equipment's really basic. When I started out making syrup with my dad and uncle, my earliest memory was actually sitting with my grandma in the kitchen, pounding a nail through the top of like a metal coffee, Folgers coffee can, and then winding a piece of wire in that so that we could then hang that from the spout on the tree. So we just used, you know, whatever we had, right? Coffee cans, people use milk jugs that are cleaned out, whatever you can do. So anyway, you know, all those materials are available. And then as people get a little bit larger, there are a few dedicated maple syrup supply companies in the state, kind of scattered throughout the state. And again, you could find those at the wistmaple.org website and the Winter Institute that's happening this weekend. They'll all be there. So if people happen to have Saturday free, you can come and check that out and talk with other producers and meet the equipment suppliers as well.
Great. And for those who maybe don't have access to the internet in their homes, you can always go to the library. They can help you. They can help you get online, and they probably have a book about it. So,
you're
not out in the cold on that one. Let's go to Mary in Madison. Mary, you have a question just real quick because we don't have too much time left.
Yes, when do the trees get the nutrients from the soil? And when does that storage of nutrients begin? Do they start producing it, storage in the fall or before that?
Yeah, good question. So the sap season happens right as the tree is coming out of dormancy. So that's in the spring when we have temperatures go into freezing at night and thawing conditions during the day. That's basically the tree getting ready to start growing again. So it's moving that sap out into the tree. The tree actually stores sap throughout the entire tree and in the roots and everywhere, but that it starts moving throughout the tree to get ready to grow. And then all of the sugar that's in sap comes through the process of photosynthesis, which the tree starts, you know, as soon as the first leaves come out. So it starts making sugar right away in the spring, and actually the most of it happens from, you know, the first leaves until about the middle of July. From the middle of July onto the rest of the summer, it starts slowing down and getting ready for dormancy, and then actually does a little bit of a conversion process of all the sap that's in it, gets it ready for winter storage as we go into the fall. But everything comes, you know, is produced during that short summer growing season. And so all those things are obviously connected together, right? So the better growing season you have, the better sap season you have the next year. And the cycle keeps on going, right?
Yep, absolutely. And thank you for that call. We're not going to be able to get to all the rest of you, but thank you so much. We had Nick in Edgerton who said that he makes wine out of syrup.
Nice. Awesome.
And Tom in New Holstein said that he uses maple syrup to make old fashions. So.
I think that is its highest use.
I think it's probably personal favorite.
But.
Yeah, it is Wisconsin. It is Wisconsin. So this has been so much fun, Jeremy. Thank you so much for being with us. And we need to check in with you again maybe next year to see how things are going.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We've been talking with Jeremy Solon. He is the Maple Syrup Project Manager for UW Extension and owner of Tapped Maple Syrup in Stevens Point. Join us tomorrow. We're going to talk about ice dams with home improvement expert John Freiberger, and of course take your other questions tomorrow on the Ideas Network. Hope you can join us. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Stay well.